Hello and welcome back to the Flail of Skulls podcast. I'm Joe, and as usual, I'm joined by Casper. Say hi.
Hi.
Today we're going to be looking at the dwarfs, and this will be our 12th episode of the version 4.0 podcast. We hope you are liking what you're hearing so far, and this should definitely be an interesting one because the dwarfs is a faction that's been quite difficult to find a proper balance for, simply because they were so one-sided before in 5th edition.
Yeah, but I think already with the early versions of dwarves, we did a lot of good improvements for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And definitely many of those changes will remain in the version 4.0 because they have definitely seemed to be working in our games. So, anything we want to mention before we jump straight into it?
Just that the dwarves were very boring gunline play, and they only really saw melee combat if the enemy run blindly into dwarven regiments without knowing how to fight them, or if you could beat them, which the answer was often no. If a dwarf regiment is really, really buffed, then there are very few things that can beat it.
Yeah.
So it would just be easy to avoid that big block of expensive dwarven regiment and then just pick off some war machines and small units. And then win the game like that.
Yeah.
A lot of people had even won tournaments with the organ gun spam, but really that's just because people don't know how to play against it.
Yeah, pretty much.
But it's very boring to play against the organ gun spam. But the only option you have as the opponent is to deploy every unit you have in very small columns in the very far back, so you minimize the damage a lot, if not completely, depending on the dices from the organ guns.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't move forward until the organ guns are dealt with, or your flyers and range fire can take care of them.
Yeah,
really boring to play that way, and not the way the game is supposed to be played, but it's also not supposed to be played with organ gun spam.
Indeed.
So really shifting the main play from gunline play. It's probably still the best build that you can do with dwarves, but it's a lot more interesting to try to build armies that can fight and control the board.
Yeah.
Now,
I mean, yeah, you can still build the gun line, but of course you can't do an organ spam because you can only bring the 2 war machines per 1,000 points, meaning you'll have 4 war machines in a regular 2,000 point army. And there are definitely a lot of changes to other armies, making infantry more interesting, meaning that you won't have many turns to use your gun line before you've got a bunch of decent foot regiments all up in your face. So I think I like the best the like half and half build. You build like a strong defensive unit, and then you support it with some range fire and a variety of artillery pieces.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's jump straight into it. And of course, with all the version 4.0s, we have made a change to the pricing of regular equipment, increasing the cost, meaning that the choices of equipment you choose for your characters is more meaningful, and you don't have a character which would potentially have like 7 or 8 different types of weapons on them, which would seem silly. even for Warhammer. For the army selection, it's very standard. It's 35% characters and 35% minimum for regiments, and of course the war machine restrictions that we mentioned earlier. So not much change there, but and we'll see as we go into the characters that. Yeah, I think we've only done a few points adjustments since last, if I'm correct.
Yeah, since the last edition, I don't think we have tinkered much with characters.
No, no, it's it's pretty much the same as before.
Yeah. So, but generally, they just cost a little bit less because the basic dwarven troop is
cheaper
because of the calculation method that we changed, which you can see in our earlier versions how we came up with that. But other than that, we should just talk about how to build the general and the importance of him.
Let's do that. Let's talk some strategy instead. So the general first. We've definitely seen different types of builds come out for the general as we've made the changes in our test battles. We still see the parrying rune spam with the golden scepter of Norgrim and a ward save of some kind, alongside like a rune smith with the spell breaking and more parrying runes. That we've definitely seen that build still, and it is still quite a good build. But you've also done a master rune of flight build with the general, have you not?
Yeah, it's it's not like it's really potent, but I think it's quite good when you combine it with smiting.
Yes.
Then that flight really has a chance to kill something. I think that's really the only option to make the flight rune work. And still, the weapon is still pretty strong. If you don't gain anything from the flight rune, if it's just in melee, you still have D6 wounds, which are made before any saves are made, so which is different from any other multiplier wound items. But it specifically says that for the dwarves, which makes it a lot better.
Yes, because there's a lot more saves that has to be done.
It's a lot easier to do damage.
Yeah. You'll do more average damage that way than you will if they have to do just one save.
I thought about normalizing that because it doesn't really make sense that the dwarf said that, but I felt like that it was a good thing for the dwarves to kind of have those options to make a very strong killer.
Like a miniature Hydra sword. Isn't it?
Yeah,
it would work essentially the same way.
The Hydra sword is a little bit better because it's you roll more dice because it's after the first layer of dices to hit.
Which is why it's not as strong because it's after the to wound part.
But then you can combine it with two other runes, which makes it better.
Yeah,
but also more expensive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but and there's also the option of doing smiting, cleaving, and and Swift. That's also a very, very good option. So you general strike first and can do a lot of damage that way.
I've also been thinking about the curse rune to kind of build like a custom made flail of skulls. Because with the, like, if you're looking at the dwarf general, it's very unlikely that he's going to see combat against another character unless it's a very important character.
Yeah. But I think you're thinking about the Fate Rune instead of the Curse Rune.
Yeah, Fate Rune. Sorry, the Fate Rune.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely also makes sense. It's not a bad rune at all. You can make a pretty good flail of skulls for the Dwarf King that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Provided you wouldn't just want to pick the Flail of Skulls, of course. But you could give it improvements.
Yeah.
What else would you build?
Yeah, but then you have you also have the option for that Book of Grudges, which is also a very good item. So you need to get Hatred. That's also a good option. It's only for the king, but you can. It says if you read the text that the general can be the High King.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a strange text. It doesn't quite make sense, but that's how I always understood it, I think.
Yeah, it's like they didn't want to have the option. They didn't want to make a difference between a dwarf lord and a dwarf king. It's maybe they had like an early idea of making like two different types of generals for the dwarves, kind of like a somewhere between a general and a hero. So you had like an expensive general and a cheaper one. I don't know, but
yeah,
it just seems strange that they have that wording. Why not just have it a dwarf king?
It's probably because of law. I don't know.
Yeah,
but
probably.
But whatever. The throne is also a lot more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The throne provides a lot of hitting power and a lot of defense. And now it's it all also boosts the movement of your dwarf units if enemies are close.
Mm-hmm.
And it can march. So we improved the throne. I think the throne is also a viable way to go.
Yeah, I mean, there is a nice idea I've been thinking about with the throne. Basically, the general on the throne, and then put him with one of the vanguard movement elite units. Then they go there 6 inches up, and then they next turn they can march another 6, or maybe make that another 8. In, because of the golden scepter.
Yeah.
And then you're within 12, most likely, of an enemy unit. And you're also within 12 of your own units.
Yeah, it's... but the last part, within 12 of your own units, it's kind of hard to do that. Then the other units also need to be elite units that can move swiftly forward otherwise.
Well, that depends. I mean, if you're deploying them straight on a line, and well, then you would need to be. Of course, the enemy would have had need to move so that you're in the halfway or at the 12-inch mark. On the 12-inch mark, you can both reach the enemy deployment line and your own.
Yeah, but the other units are gonna be behind.
Yes, because of the Vanguard, of course. Yeah, so you do definitely, but even if you build a throne general, you definitely need to build a regiment that can survive and a general that can survive, because he's very exposed on the throne, even with those four wounds to the gate.
Yeah, but he has 8 additional attacks, the model with the throne bearers.
I'm thinking more about enemy artillery fire, because there's no way he can use lookout, sir.
Yeah. But then he has 4 wounds that can be negated before anything happens. But the bad thing about the throne is that it makes you stuck.
Mm-hmm.
If the bearers die.
Yeah.
And I thought a lot about that, changing that, so regular units could pick up the bearers, or just having them not be champions to start with. But I think that the throne is, it's so powerful that it has to have a downside, otherwise it starts to become mandatory. Mm-hmm.
Well, couldn't you just have the general leave the throne once it's stuck?
No, he can't. It says that that he's stuck there.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And the unit is stuck there. If
I figured he could leave the unit like he could leave a broken down chariot.
Yeah, but it's not how it's supposed to. It's written.
But it makes sense to have a downside compared to the buff it provides. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, and it still needs to have a lot of attention in order to bring it down.
Yeah.
And probably doesn't really change that much if the enemy is able to bring the throne down. Then they probably have so much magic or ranged fire that they don't even have to try to fight the regiment. So it doesn't really matter if that regiment has movement or not.
Yeah, that is true.
They are able to do that, because it's 4 wounds negated, and then it's 4 wounds that are randomized that has to hit the bearers as well and kill them. Yeah, so it takes quite a lot. Yeah, but let's move on.
The battle standard.
Yeah, given that the dwarves have such high leadership to start with, and you really want to use your points on general, runesmith, and champions.
Mm-hmm.
It's another time where that the battle standard needs to be in big battle in order to be included. And also, it doesn't really matter if your dwarves have a reroll to break, because if your dwarf units break, then you did something wrong.
Yeah,
I think, because you don't have, you're not gonna pick 2 fights in a battle with dwarves, because they're still slow, even though we improved their mobility a lot, but they will still only get that 1 fight.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That is the nature of the dwarves, yeah. So you need to win that fight, and you have the tools to win that fight, depending on how you build your army. So, yes. Yeah, so
you don't really need the battle standard bearer. I can't think of a situation, not even in a big battle, where I would want to have that.
If I wanted a unit of miners that I did not want to special deploy, and I wanted to give them a... Oh, they may already carry a magic belt. Never mind. If I wanted a unit of slayers to have a magic banner in a big battle,
but they all already kind of have a magic banner being unbreakable, so what else do you want them to have?
Yes, I'm not really sure what I would want to give them in that case. Maybe something to force the enemy to fight them, maybe like a banner of wrath or something. Because you're going to be using, you're going to have the, in a really big battle, you're going to have the altar with you as well. But yeah,
Yeah, so the only argument is that the battle stand and the hero are almost the same price. Mm-hmm. But with the battle standard, you get that plus one combat res, but lose an attack and an item. So maybe in some situations that would be interesting, but I think two items beat that.
Yeah.
Most
it
of
probably
the time.
Like a like a anti magic banner. Like for Slayers, that would be the best thing, I think. But that would be way big battles.
Yeah.
Heroes is definitely a more interesting choice. Quite a few different versions we've built there as well. Usually, heroes are difficult to find points for, because you want to put as much points as you can into your dwarf regiments.
Now I beg to differ a bit, because you can build a cheap dwarf general that is still quite strong, and have a cheap runesmith and a champion, and you don't need a wizard for dwarves. So you have points for a hero, and that's what can make a another block of dwarf units really, really good. He can be very good with two runic items on him. And I think for dwarves, it's a nice thing to have more than one really strong fighting regiment in.
Oh yes.
If you're not going the gun line route, because you're not gonna, like I said, get more than one fight, so and your regiments are not gonna support each other unless the enemy plays really badly, so they need to perform on their own, and I think you can do that. You can build in a 2,000 point army, you can definitely build two fighting regiments, dwarves that can beat most other regiments. You can probably also build a third that would beat all support regiments.
I suppose, yeah, you can find points there. They have seen some points reductions, the dwarves, so it is actually possible, as you say, now that I think about it. So yeah, I mean, it's not just an option to get a sky arrow if you want that. It's also a way of buffing one of your fighting regiments. I can see that.
Yeah. And the champions are really good.
Mm-hmm.
Both, of course, a black gem, but there's also the option for an Ironbreak champion with the three parrying runes is quite strong.
I think.
He has a 3+ save before any other buffs to his save, and negates 3 attacks. Then a lot of dangerous foes will have, if it's a character, will have 4 attacks, and then that one attack needs to be quite lucky to kill that champion. So that's also, of course, you're paying the points to get this powerful champion, but
well, can he have three parrying runes, since he has to have the rune of stone
Yeah, he gets that the Rune of Stone for free.
Uh-huh, yes,
It
of course.
it says that
Yeah.
with for
It
the
doesn't prevent him
Ironbreaker,
from having.
so
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
so
you're right.
yeah,
And
so
that's a pretty strong champion build as well. Not just against characters, but it can also do some serious damage reduction against enemy charges.
Yeah. But he's of course pretty squishy to a single target spell.
Yeah.
But yeah. So yeah, and then there's this the Slayer champions, which we made it so that they're taking from regiment allowance, and not from from regiment allowance, and not from character allowance. I don't see this coming into play ever, but it was the kind of the only way to make them interesting, I think, and it probably can. In a thematic battle come into play, but I really don't see the idea and the need to use Slayer champions.
I agree. They were very difficult to find the points for in a 2,000 point army, simply because the other choices were so much better, and there were some that you were absolutely necessary. And they weren't that good. I mean, they have a decent stat line, but they can only carry a weapon, so they are always vulnerable to some kind of enemy first model in path spells, or single targets, or artillery, or cannon fire. Anything could pretty much wipe them out, and that was a lot of points invested that you're going to lose. So, yeah, making them part of the regiments. Still very fluffy choice, but since, I mean, it's rare that you want to build a big block of Slayers, you probably want one of these champions when you do, but it's likely just going to be a, well, you can't even give a black gem to a giant Slayer, so, yeah. It's fluffy, but now it's a little bit more interesting than before, and I've definitely toyed around with it a little bit. It's just very difficult to let go of the better choices here.
Yeah.
Of course, there's the Runesmith, and while it does say 0 to 1, it should probably always be 1, because you really need those runes spell breaking. Sometimes I've seen Casper also deploy the Runesmith, not only as the Dispeller, also with parrying runes and the black gem, I think, was it? Or is that two different versions?
Yeah, that's two different
builds. Yeah, black gem and a something else. And then the other build is spell runes and parrying runes and a armor save source.
Yeah.
Or a ward.
It's just the idea that the Runesmith might have used his dispel runes before he's in combat, and then he might as well be the black the gem bearer instead of having to also pay the points for a champion.
Yeah,
that's just the idea around that thought. The other thought is that he actually provides a combat rest by denying the enemy attacks with the parrying runes, and put it on him, put something else or on the general. It seems quite nice sometimes as well. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, both are
it's definitely about when you build a dwarf army, optimize your general, optimize your runesmith, but do it cheap as you can. It doesn't. You don't always have to use all the character points for dwarves, I think.
I agree.
Because really, you just have expensive models that are really slow, that might not see combat even with the buffs that we made.
Yeah.
So over investing into characters, you need to have a specific plan around it, I think. Otherwise, it's just it might just be better to have regular units that can do something, like crossbows.
I agree. All right.
But we made the runesmith, the master, and lord cheaper, I think, in this version.
Yeah.
To make them more interesting, and they are really, really potent fighters.
Yes, I have been tinkering with building a rune lord fighter. But I haven't quite completed it yet. I've been thinking about Master Rune of Flight, and I've been thinking about trying to. That would be the master the runes of fury for the attacks.
Yeah,
and probably master rune of striking or something like that. Give like two attacks and strike first.
Yeah,
but then you need to see him into combat. So, and you probably want to give him the. You want to have a general with the Book of Grudges with him to give the hatred?
Oh, that's going to be a lot of eggs in one regiment.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
So that's why I started thinking about the Master Rune of Flight, because there he can pretty much do his own, and with strength 5, he's more likely to wound.
Yep.
Could even give him additional strength to make it strength 6.
So the anvil, we also buffed that.
Mm-hmm.
So each bolt needs to be disbuilt separately, which makes it quite interesting. And it's a good choice for dwarves now to deal with the enemy gem bearer.
Yes.
Because if you get the 3 power cards in the anvil. Then the enemy needs to use 3 dispels to be sure that his champion is not dead.
Yeah, that's pretty strong.
Of course, it still needs to wound, and it still needs to
yes.
go the whole round. But that actually makes it worth something. Before, it was only worth including if you also made a weird wizard play with Crown of Sorcery on Allied Wizard.
You definitely needed it was a supporting item for a spellcaster beforehand, which was so strange to have in a dwarf army.
Yeah, it was cool to actually make this worth something, and I think it's interesting and quite nice now, even without any other magic support.
Yeah, I agree.
If you have room for Banner of Wrath, then it's quite nice to combine those two. But I don't really think you need Banner of Wrath with the anvil.
No, it depends. I guess it will be up to the winds of magic how many power cards you draw. Because you will need to have like 2 good rounds in a row with the power cards to likely be able to do the stuff you want to do. I mean, if you only get 1 power card in 1 turn, then you have to wait a full turn before you can do anything.
Yeah.
So,
and you pay the points for it.
I think the Banner of Wrath is a decent addition as a backup to keep forcing dispels so they can't retain them on their hand for the next turn.
Yeah, but even having the enemy to need three dispels in a turn is quite nice. It's definitely not insane because it's easy to block if the enemy sees the anvil, then just he just hides his his champion behind a support unit, and then you have no.
Yeah, no real effect here.
The anvil is played around and negated, and it's a waste of points then. Yeah,
it's true. That's definitely not powerful, but that's why I think I would definitely be happier if I could afford the Banner of Wrath if I included an anvil. But I can definitely see it going without it just as a. It's a lot of 150 points is a lot for, but then again 225 points if you get the Banner of Wrath, that's also even more points.
Yeah,
it depends on how much you want to gamble, I guess.
Yeah, but there are fun new options available to the dwarves. So
yeah.
So should we move on to regiments?
Let's do that. And first up, of course, we have the special rules that we had in the previous versions with the minimum 35%. They can march. Dwarves, all dwarves can march, even if there's an enemy within 8. And, of course, any elite units have the Vanguard march move before battle, including any characters that are in those units. And we start with the Longbeards. I think Longbeards. I think it's the last choice of elite units for me.
Okay. I think it's the first for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Because
in order to make the hammers work, then you absolutely need to combine that with a first strike character or a parrying character. Otherwise, the hammers is out of the question. Not very good.
But you do have the shield option, so you do not have to have. You can just build them exactly like the Longbeards.
Yeah, but then why not just have Longbeards? But yeah, the Iron Breakers 3 points more. And that save is really nice.
They are expensive.
You could assume that if an enemy wants to meet your dwarf block, then he's not worried about that additional one extra armor save. Then he has dealt with that in the build that his unit is. Otherwise, he's not gonna do it. So I don't think it matters if you pay those additional points. I don't think the unit is gonna be that much better. So I kind of like the Longbeards. It's my preference for main regiment in most builds. But I also use the others, the elite units. But
I think the reason why I don't include them, so if I want to go cheaper, I'll go the hammerers. I mean, if I feel like I don't need that 4+ armor save, that's my cheaper option. And I can even go expensive and give them two-handed, or I can build them exactly like the Longbeards. So I never really consider Longbeards. And then if I want to go more expensive, or if
But do you have hammer models without great weapons?
No, but I can definitely put some together.
Yeah, okay, but then it's not going to be nice models.
Well, right now we're just going in theory. We're not going for what we actually have.
Yeah. So but there's no difference on paper between that. It's only that you have cool Longbeard models, and you have cool hammer units with great weapons.
Ironbreakers, I mean, the immune psychology is nice, but their leadership is already so high, it's not really a worry.
Nah, but it is nice because you pay those additional points, you get that little bit of extra. Mm-hmm. And that actually makes them not having to worry about the fear. If you don't invest a lot into it, Ironbreakers, mm-hmm. they can, because that immune psychology, they can be a perfect support unit, and you don't have to put a character with them, and then worrying about them being loose to a skeleton unit or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. That would be horrendous if a because usually you'd be outnumbered by skeletons. So I can definitely see it as a better situational, a counter pick. Also, I like the option, like as a secondary or a supporting unit that's like a 2+ armor save with given the standard of shielding.
Yeah, definitely.
Sometimes like a screening unit if you're expecting like a lot of ranged fire.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of like the Ironbreakers as a unit that can perform without characters. And with a cheap banner, just like a support unit, not as a main regiment.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I'm trying to do the most, and have done tons of builds, but I haven't quite made the perfect one yet, because it there's always other things that are better. But I really, really want to do a good 2,000 point build with all three lead units.
Oh yeah,
and it's a completely different way of thinking, dwarves. Mm-hmm. Because if you're gonna do that, then there's really little of the war machines that seems interesting to include in that kind of build, because that's a kind of like dwarves that are a little bit fast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. I've been thinking about it as well. All right, Dwarf Warriors. I think the main difference here is that they got the free standard and musician as well, which they did not have in version 3.0. Is that correct?
Yeah, you might be correct about that.
But
that's kind of nice to still have them as a good option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were getting a little too much outweighed by the free commands on the elite units, and it fits with the dwarves that they are. They always have a even their regular warriors are kind of elite.
Yeah. So and these were definitely the best before, because spears combined with the scepters, the strength 4 spears, could actually do something, and it doesn't. Mm-hmm. It didn't really make sense to include elite units because they were just more expensive and still very, very slow. So I'd definitely looking at the warrior still if you build a gun line,
mm-hmm.
With spears, but if you build some kind of a orphans build, semi-orphaned build, then I'm gonna look at the elite units.
Yeah, I agree. You definitely want that extra vanguard march move.
Makes it so that your dwarves will get to the center of the map first,
mm-hmm.
and then the enemy has no choice but to fight them if he wants to capture any table quarters.
Yeah.
So the whole usually you beat dwarfs by capturing table quarters and killing a little bit here and a little bit there, and then you win a minor victory
mm-hmm.
over them, and the dwarfs could do nothing about that really. If they didn't do damage with their war machines, if you played around that, then they had no way of changing the flow of the battle.
Yeah.
But if you get there first to the middle, then the enemy has to fight your big scary block in order to actually capture those points. So
yeah,
even just getting to the middle first is quite huge for dwarves.
Yeah. And if you're going with three elite units in a dwarf army, then the enemy also has to come to the middle and fight the main big blocks simply to get the points.
Yeah.
All right. Dwarf crossbowmen. We did do a small change here to them in the version 4.0, that we are allowing one unit of crossbowmen to be upgraded to rangers. This will be at 1 point per model each. And if they do this, they get the option to special deploy, similar to scout units. And if they do, this ranger unit is also skirmish, but cannot carry a magic banner.
Yep.
Definitely a nice change. I think this would be a way to bring a small unit of march blockers into the enemy back line. This would work quite well with the more offensive dwarf line, I think.
Yeah. And the thing is to keep in mind that this is not too overpowered at all, because the unit has to be deployed like out of sight of the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's like in a wood, then the dwarves need to move in within two ranges of the wood in order to fire, but you can't fire with crossbows if you moved.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't be able to combine that. You would need to do that in over two rounds, making the enemy able to react to it if need be. But yeah, but it's nice to give them that kind of mobility map control option.
Yeah, I agree. All right, then we have the Thunderers. And the Thunderers, of course, I believe we did this change in version 3.0 to the handguns. Yeah, so they're probably earlier, but they're pretty much the same. Still a great unit. Definitely something worth bringing in units of 8 or 10 to get those two lines, as you can minimize the space your front line will take up.
Because even at 20mm bases, 9 models for a crossbow unit, it will still take up some space and force you to deploy awkwardly with some of your stuff.
Yeah, definitely. That's really the selling point of Thunderers, that they're,
mm-hmm.
they're not as wide as crossbows are.
Yeah.
Because you want to have your main block, and then you want to have probably some war machines close to that, or some kind of war machines in the middle. And then
mm-hmm.
you want to have some support units, and you also want your shooting units in the middle, maybe some slayers. There's a lot of things that you want to deploy closely together, so that really makes a lot of difference
mm-hmm.
that they don't take up as much space.
So
I kind of like them for that purpose,
mm-hmm.
but definitely crossbows for holding table quarters.
Yes.
In the sides, but for the center, Thunderers are great. No, yep. I think.
I agree. I definitely agree. Of course, we have the Miners. Miners still have their underground tunnel ability. They're pretty much the same as before. We really like the way they've turned out now, being sort of a secondary vanguard deployment unit you have. So you have the Miners with a chance to come up to appear. But you also have the dwarf crossbowmen who can be upgraded to rangers. So now you have some extra options to support those more offensive builds that you can make with the dwarves. I think it's very really looking good with the synergy for the list.
Yeah, and I think miners are absolutely mandatory now.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I go with 8 with shields.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't really make sense to do more, because the enemy can react to them, but if there's only 8, he probably don't want to react to them, because they don't pose that much of a threat. If they pose a threat, then they are also worth a lot of points.
Yeah.
So usually I go with 8 with shields. Yeah,
I have a tendency to go around 12, I think. I still think it's poses a little bit of a threat, so the enemy might have to deal with it, but they have to deploy enough away from the front line when I have got that 2 combat result in order to deal with it. So I think it's sort of like, do you want it to be a nuisance, or do you want to be a little bit of a threat, or you want to be a big threat? And usually you probably want, I agree, you don't want it as a big threat, because then the enemy will just turn the entire focus to that, use those points to win the game, and just run around in circles around you for the rest of the time.
Yeah, and you can also just do 5 without shields, mm-hmm. and then never deploy them until your turn 5, then they auto-deploy, and then they capture a table quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have kind of wasted 50 points if the enemy controls all table quarters, or you already control some.
Yeah, if they hold the middle, so they deny all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have more options for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I tend to do 8. But yeah.
Yeah.
They are very cool now.
Oh yes, yes, a great unit for the dwarves. And definitely a way for them to see more play, as now they probably see play in every game.
Yeah.
All right, Slayers. Nothing's changed in the Slayers as well. They're in a pretty good spot. They still have their 2-inch additional charge range, bringing them up to a basic charge range of 8 inches. Still a supporting unit. I doubt I'll see a main Slayer regiment anytime soon. Unless I'm doing a thematic or fluffy build. I see these at about... probably 10 models a unit.
Yeah, you definitely need a little bit more size to them.
Mm-hmm.
They were so boring in regular 5th, because they were 5 models strong, and they were just roadblocks. And they were really good at that, but that was their function. And because of the overrun rule, we kind of negated that with Slayers now. Mm-hmm. It's not really worth doing 5 Slayers, because...
Yeah, because
not all regiments will be able to kill 5 models, but the enemy will not charge if he's not sure that he will mm-hmm. kill the 5, so he can overrun. So you need more Slayers now, and I don't think Slayers are mandatory anymore.
No,
in a dwarf army, which kind of is also nice, because I felt like that Slayers will always had a place in the regular 5th edition,
you would bring,
but they held
4
back
units
other
of 5
units
or more.
Yeah, they held back other units from mm-hmm. being able to. I think it's a lot cooler that to bring the elite dwarves into play than Slayers, and then have Slayers see play sometimes, but not always.
Mm-hmm. I do have some nice Slayer models, but. Yeah, I like the idea that I don't have to deploy Slayers in every game. As opposed to before, as you've mentioned.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, they're taking up so much space. And now, if you do want to make, like, a roadblock, yeah, you need to make it a minimum of 8. And that's suddenly quite a few points just for a roadblock.
Yeah, but it's definitely also good to have 16 Slayers, I think. Unbreakable stuff are always good and always dangerous, and they can charge 2 more inches. That's also quite nice.
Yeah, with 16 models, it's going to take a while to chew through them as well. With the option of taking a lot of damage on the way because of the Slayer's inert 4+ to wound.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, definitely many options for the Slayers, and of course, the option of no Slayers, which is great. Alright, War Machines, did we adjust the gyrocopter further?
Maybe we changed the price a little bit, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Normalized it maybe a little bit.
Yeah. It's pretty good, but it was too expensive and too easily dealt with just one wound on the pilot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's at 70 points now, so it's quite cheap. Maybe we should do the stone thrower first, which is first on the list. But the stone thrower have also received some changes. They've been more normalized in price, as you can with the small stone thrower at 50 points and the big stone thrower at 70 points. And of course, we have done a major change to stone throwers, or not a major change, but it has might have a bigger impact on the usage of stone throwers, because they can now hit a total of 13 to 16 models with the template. And if you look at the general Flail Skulls rules, you'll find an example there of how that looks. So while they still have the downside of being awful at hitting, as stone throwers are, they do have the upside of when they finally do hit, they will be a bigger impact than before. Well, usually it was like, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 models you would kill in a game with a stone thrower.
Yeah, unless you got a hit, of course.
Yeah, unless you got a hit and your guess was correct. They are definitely better now with that option. And, of course, now you can also give heavy armor to the crew, meaning that they'll be able to defend themselves a little better.
Yeah. And that actually matters a lot. But I think the really cool thing is that the Rune of Accuracy is half price, which makes it Dwarven Stone Throwers very interesting, I think, and actually something that I quite like to include, also because the part that they don't need to have line of sight themselves, so they can deploy behind your troops
and fire and hills and the forest, etc.
Quite nice. Yeah. I don't think they can deploy in a forest.
No, not in a forest, behind one.
Yeah.
And the gyrocopter, of course, the pilot has heavy armor as before, but now it's the gyrocopter is quite cheap. Which reflects its very weak survivability.
Yep.
Bolt throwers have also seen a price reduction. No, that's an old one. That's back in 22. So the bolt throwers are still at 45 points, and they're down to 2 crew.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that we changed the Seeking rune to also give +1 to hit against regular targets. The Seeking can hit flying high and also get +1 to hit, and also makes the damage magical. So it's quite nice to have a bow thrower with Seeking now. It's insane, but it's it opens up your zoning potential and your the danger to to a creature flying high. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there aren't as many flyers per se in the new version of Flail of Skulls because of the changes we've done to the game. It's still nice to have a little protection because you will be meeting harpies at some point. And the plus one to hit also means that it'll be a little bit less difficult to hit enemy cavalry, heavy cavalry units if you find yourself against those. So all in all, the bolt thrower with the runes seeking is it's a nice addition.
Yeah. And I kind of like that we buffed the runes because
yes.
Most of the runes for the dwarven artillery, they were utterly useless and not
yeah.
really. So we kind of buffed a lot of them, and that's quite cool.
Mm. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And given that the we limited the choices of war machines for the for all factions, this definitely seemed to hit the dwarves the most, therefore giving them buffs to their runes and giving them price reductions to their war machines is the way to counteract that, so their war machines are still meaningful while not having a major impact on the game.
Yep.
So the flame cannon is also a significant price reduction since its original cost in 5th edition is now down to 85 points. And this
yep.
is one of the changes we've done in the version 4.0. Of course, also all artillery pieces are now able to wear heavy armor instead of the light armor option, giving them a little bit more protection. It's not significant, but it can add up.
I think it is significant because you should always do this because it's
oh, yes,
so
I,
much protection against the range fire and so much more arrows that the enemy need to.
Mm, oh yeah, definitely. I definitely feel like it's something you must do. And it will still give you a 6-up save against the harpy attacks as well. But mainly against range fire, this option. The organ gun is increased to 75 points, I believe.
I don't know, but the overall change to organ gun is that we nerfed it so heavily, but it's even though it's still pretty good.
Mm, yeah.
But it was just how could they ever Games Workshop ever defend the organ gun being
yeah.
5 cannons in one, and then just the only thing that a cannon was better at was a little bit of a range and
mm-hmm.
wounds. Other than that, it was 5 cannons in one.
Yeah,
it was just that. That's a
at a cheaper cost than a cannon.
Yeah, yeah, that mm-hmm. was. They had no idea what they were doing when they designed that.
Yeah, pretty much. It was ridiculously good before. So of course, as
and it was so good that the other war machines should never be used.
Mm, yeah.
It was just organ guns, and then forget everything about all the other cool war machines.
Yes. Yeah.
We've changed that now.
Yeah. Because now you're down to in the previous edition, we reduced it to 16-inch maximum range, meaning that even with the artillery die on top, with the bounce, that's an average of 26.
No, a max of 26, right? So, average of 20, 21, yeah.
Well, it does the D10 in addition to its maximum guess range, and then it
yeah.
also bounces.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course.
Yeah, so it does actually still have a range of 36, potentially.
Yeah, if you roll very high, but
mm.
but this changes that the enemy doesn't have to counter organ guns by deploying his whole army in a thin line in very back, which just kind of looks silly and defeats the whole purpose of regiments. Now, if you deploy your regiment like 4 inches back from the front, then I think it was 4 inches, but I can't remember, but something like that, then half of the organ gun damage is already negated.
Because the average is 10 inches on those two D10s.
Yeah, but you need the first, yeah, but it's, you need the first one to line up in front of your target, of course. So really you need the, if you're outside of 21 range, then it's only half the shots that are gonna reach you in average.
Yeah.
Meaning
there's the zoning area for the organ gun is reduced significantly, meaning you have, as an opponent to organ guns, have a lot more room to move in.
Yeah. But you still cannot ignore it. If you move too close without taking care of the organ gun, then
it's going to shred you. Yeah.
Then it's still gonna do a lot of damage. It's still gonna kill a whole, most of a whole block of troops.
Yeah, pretty much.
And we also made it so that now it almost cannot kill characters anymore because it only does one wound.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense because the cannon shots, they shouldn't be as big as a real cannon. If you fail a lookout, sir, then you're going to take a wound. Okay, fair enough. It's not game breaking.
Mm-hmm.
But before it just was taking three lookout, sirs, from just one organ gun. And there would probably be eight of them. So it was just, that was dumb. And then.
Pretty much the way all characters ended up dying to dwarves is, here's an organ gun. Oh, wait, here's seven more.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this has opened up the war machines a lot, and with the counter we did with buffing the runes and reducing the price of war machines, I think it's a lot more interesting to play around with the war machines for dwarves.
Yeah.
I kind of like to do four different war machines for dwarves now. It's probably more a thing that I think is cool than the best build, but I don't think it's bad.
No, it feels like very thematic for dwarves to have just an array of assortment of war machines to do all kinds of different things. And each of them to fill a small role rather than being all-encompassing of your tactics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having a cannon, an organ gun, and stone thrower, and a bow thrower, I think that's a quite nice combination. It's not bad to swap one of them for a gyrocopter or a flame cannon either. So, yeah. It's very nice now.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the last one is the cannon. Cannon has received a price reduction as well, and been increased to D6 wounds, which we did in the last edition to make it more similar to the Empire Great Cannon. The Empire Great Cannon still has the advantage of range, but with 48 inch range, that is not a significant buff in any sense of the word.
Yeah, but now the Empire cannon has improved.
It has the improved misfire chart. Yeah, so it does have an advantage over the cannon.
Yeah, but the dwarf cannon then has the runes. So
yeah. And of course, monsters. We've done the same with the monster list for the dwarves, as we have done with the other factions. We have removed all the monsters that that we felt were not fitting for the dwarf army. And in this case, that was a lot of them. So therefore, we have just I'm just going to go through the ones that we're keeping. So you can still bring a dragon. It is a viable tactic if you want to do some air power with dwarves to bring a dragon. This being just a regular one in a 2,000 point army. So to have some air power, this could be an interesting synergy as well with your more offensive dwarf line.
Yep.
If you can afford the points, of course. And we're still keeping the griffin and the hippogriff. And a hippogriff is, of course, on a cavalry base and therefore not a large target, as with the 4.0 changes to hippogriffs. All right. Shall we go into the special characters?
Yeah, if we must.
If we must, yes. We still don't recommend special characters that are used for competitive games, but if you are going to bring them, especially for thematic games or campaigns, we have made them a bit more viable. So first up is, of course, King Cazador of Karak Azul. He is the same as last edition. These special characters, we did not feel like there were not much need to change them. I think
we did a lot of work on them
back in the day. Yeah,
last edition, because it was changing the runes, giving them sensible runes that could actually had use. So they're quite in a good spot.
So I think we could. I guess we should still go through it, just to give a reminder. So King Cazador, he's been given the he had the Master Rune of Death and the Rune of Striking, and then we've given him the Rune of Cleaving to give him to wound roll a little bit easier. So he has a better chance of hitting, better chance of wounding, and then, of course, the auto-kill. And with the Rune of Cleaving, he also has additional armor modifiers. And then we changed the armor to have the Rune of Stone and the Rune of Resistance to save some points. So he has a better armor save, and he can reroll that on a 4+. And we gave 2 runes of luck to the Thunderhorn, meaning he can do even further rerolls. So while he does not have a ward save, he is he does have a lot of rerollable armor saves and rerollable attacks as well. Meaning he's quite dangerous if he gets to strike.
Yeah, but he cannot reroll a reroll. He cannot use that in conjunction with resistance. Yeah,
it's more in conjunction with the Master Rune of Death, I was thinking, the 2 wound rolls.
Yeah, definitely, making him a lot more dangerous.
But again, he's quite expensive, and there's a lot of points to invest in a character who does not have a ward save.
Special characters can have a ward save.
No, of course not. And it definitely improves him from the version he was before. Yeah. So if you are going to bring him in a campaign, he will be, and there will be other special characters from other factions, this guy will be one of the dangerous ones.
Yeah. And you still need to get past toughness 5 and do 3 wounds. Otherwise, he has a good chance of killing you.
Yeah. Pretty much. Umgrim Ironfist, the Slayer King of Karakadrin. We changed his axe to have an additional 2 runes of fury, giving him an additional 2 attacks, as I believe it was just 1 rune of fury before. And maybe like a cleaving?
I don't know. I
can't remember the original.
I think
anymore.
It was a parrying.
Was. Yes, it was a parrying rune, of course. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
One parrying is. Yeah, it's not worth much. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot cooler to give him two additional attacks. It's a Slayer King, a Slayer. Yeah, he needs to do damage, mm-hmm. not parry damage.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, and he's pretty decent. I mean, he does have the Rune of Spite, so he has a 4+ ward save. He does have one relock. One rune of luck giving him one reroll is what I was trying to say in one word during the game. And of course, he's immune to fire, which is not really that important. But of course, if you are going to put him in front of an enemy unit and then use a flame cannon on them, you're not going to hurt him. But very situational. In addition, Umgrim also is unaffected by psychology, and he does have that hatred of orcs and goblins. I wish he had just like perma hatred, but he can't have everything. He's unbreakable, which is quite nice. And of course, he has that Slayer skill, so he always wounds on a 4+, unless less than that. And of course they gave him the special rule last time in version 3.0 that if he does lead a unit of regiments those slayers have their weapon skill upgraded to 5, meaning it's a little bit more thematic to bring a main slayer unit to protect your slayer king.
Yeah,
I think he's pretty decent. I mean, he's not amazing, but he's still quite good. I've definitely considered him once in a while, but he is also quite expensive for what you pay for. But yeah, having an unbreakable general is always nice. It's not exactly a necessity in dwarves. Simply because you want your regiments to win anyway. But if you are going to have a main block of slayers hold the center, this guy is a pretty good guy to lead them.
Yeah, and you can do unbreakable stuff easy with dwarves.
Yeah.
There are lots of options.
Next up, we have the Rune Lord Crag the Grim. And he hasn't really changed at all since last edition. We still think he's a pretty cool choice compared to some of the other choices. He does have the ability to have more runes than regular dwarves and runesmiths are. So he has the rule of 4, meaning that both his armor has 4 runes and his rune staff has 4 runes of spell breaking. I guess he's a decent choice. He also lacks the ward save, but he can be your general. So even though you're spending a lot of points on him, and you're spending a whole ton of points on this guy, I mean, he's the pricing of a master slam priest, but he does include a powerful general and a powerful spellbreaker or a runesmith.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's a lot of points. It's a whole lot of points. Next up, Gotrek and Felix, and we have normalized their pricings in the version 3.0. I feel they're in a pretty good spot. Apart from that, they have all their rules, and of course they're able to skirmish and special deploy, which was sorely needed for their cost. I mean, if you are going to be placing two characters that are going to be posing a threat that the enemy has to deal with, then you need to have it somewhere near where enemy units where they can actually do it. So they did not have the special deployment and they had to deploy in your deployment zone. They would just be ignored the entirety of the battle. And it would just be, 275 points that while the enemy unlikely are to claim it, maybe with some focused fire from arrows, you would not be able to utilize it to deal any damage. This way you can special deployment deploy them and they will be a threat the enemy has to deal with. Because otherwise they will slowly but surely clear out any backline. So, they're definitely one of the better
fun,
choices.
But they're not very, very good. But
No. But with this rule, I think they're one of the better choices in the special characters. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Simply because they aren't as expensive as some of the other characters, and they can be a supporting threat. Maybe when we get to Buckman, he might be a better choice, the better choice of special characters. But next up, we have the High King Thorgrim Grudgebearer, and besides a change in his costs to match the new prices of the dwarves, he's pretty much the same. He still has the Great Book of Grudges and the Throne of Power, the Armor of Skaldur, and the Dragon Crown of Karas, and the Axe of Grimnir. There's no ward save in the Armor of Skaldur, is there?
Now we should definitely include those items in the dwarf book as well.
Yes, we should.
I'm just gonna make a note of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is still the version 3.8, so there still might be a few changes from what we've been talking about today.
Yeah. So, but he's very expensive. But he actually one of the characters that made the kind of sense with his items.
Mm, yes,
they're very, very expensive, and but they're also pretty good. So he is quite strong.
Yes, I find it funny that he has hatred, but he also has the Great Book of Grudges.
I think that's because of that.
You think it's because of that they mention it?
Yeah.
It's likely, yeah, you're probably right. But it's something that the age-old argument that items that affect units won't affect the characters in the units. There's been a lot of discussion about that for a while now, especially concerning 5th edition and items like Skaven Brew. And this would actually be one of them where you could misinterpret the rules to think that while he has the Great Book of Grudges, it only applies to the unit, and then he has it in addition to that, so he also has it, if you understand my meaning.
No, it has always been the case that it applies to
both
the character and the unit.
I definitely agree with that.
The whole unit is not just the troopers.
I definitely agree with that point of view, but I'm just saying this is another case where, because of the Games Workshop writing, you could misinterpret it to mean this other rule that people have been talking about on the internet.
Yeah, but that is how the rule is.
There's
also a battle report with the Skaven Brew effects characters.
Exactly.
One of the White Dwarfs.
I definitely understand that people misinterpret it, but it's not the case. The items do affect the characters in the units as well. All right. He's built fairly well, but the items are just way too way too expensive. Which they have to be because of their abilities. So it's just a very expensive choice for a character without a ward save. He doesn't negate the first four wounds suffered, of course, but then again, he can also get stranded. So, yeah, it's definitely a thematic character, I would say, still. But the items, like the Great Book of Grudges, those are quite viable. Joseph Buckman. The Rune Tankard is the Buckman's Tankard is a little bit better now because it can negate wounds suffered. But to make him a little bit more interesting than that, we also gave him a similar option to the Ranger upgrade to the Dwarf Crosswoman, meaning that if he leads a unit of Dwarf Crosswoman, they skirmish and they can use special deployment. Of course, they cannot bring command or standard or musician, and they. And additional to that, on the first dwarf turn, this unit, joined by Joseph Buckman, may move and shoot, meaning you can go your 3 inches with your crossbowmen and then still shoot them, of course, with regular modifiers. I don't know if we should specify whether this is an addition or instead of the Ranger upgrade. What do you think?
Yeah, we probably should do a note about that.
Mm-hmm. If I feel like I mean, if I can afford to bring him and it's in addition, then having two skirmish crossbow units could have interest. However, it is quite a cost you're paying for it.
Yeah,
it's likely not going to be the points for a big enough crossbow unit to make this worth it, I think. And you'll still likely be using one unit of Rangers and one unit of Miners, and that'll be your special deployed with your offensive line.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's too expensive, probably for it's not that great.
No,
but we should definitely specify how that works. But the interesting thing is the tank card that can be used in close combat to prevent a wound. So actually, that's kind of like +1 combat risk.
Yeah.
In most cases, yeah. It's quite a nice item now, I think, and also protects you from range fire a little bit. Yeah. So it's nice.
Yeah.
I like the tank card now. It's only a problem finding the item slots for it.
Indeed. That is usually the issue when you're using dwarves, is that you always want to bring more items and more runic items, but you just don't have the slots for it.
Yeah, because you always need to give your general some kind of a good weapon. So you assure that your fighting block will win combat. And then you also need to either have a Book of Grudges or the scepter.
Yeah, the golden scepter of Norgrim. Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe also the tank card can also compete for one of those three.
Especially if you like combining the tankard with the parrying runes. You could reduce your enemy combat result to pure ranks and banners.
Yeah, but you're already almost doing that just with the parrying. But But the last item slot always need to be some kind of ward save. So you have three really good items that are competing for the same spot, and you kind of would like all of them, but you have to prioritize.
Yeah,
that's exactly. Nice. And there are other characters that can carry the others if you want. So
he's a little easier to bring than all the others because he is the second cheapest character. The cheapest one being the... Well, he's the... Well, actually, he's exactly the same price as the next character, the Guildmaster, Engineering Guildmaster. But I still think, depending on how we specify the rule, I still think Gotrek and Felix are the best choices out of the special characters.
Yeah, I kind of like the next one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the next one is pretty good as well. The Engineering Guildmaster, Burlock Damonson. Now, we did give him the rule in version 3.0 that if he's in your army, then you may always reroll your first misfire roll. This is concerning artillery pieces. So, he a little bit inspired from the later editions where you could bring engineers in dwarf armies, and it was sort of kind of like just a pure shooting army. But in this case, it's only once you can do it, and it's only the first one. So it's not going to have a huge impact on the game, but it does mean that there's a unique flavor to the character besides just being another a dwarf with more variety of runes.
Yep. But what I think is cool about him is that he's 200 points.
Mm-hmm.
He has three first strike attacks mm-hmm. with strength 7.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And he doesn't have a ward save, but he has toughness 6 and a 4 plus save. So he's protected as well yep. in that way. So I think he's a good character to include.
Mm.
Three attacks is not a lot, but they have a good strength modifier. I think he's at 200 points. It's a
he's actually quite
it's hard to make something better.
Yeah, I agree. It does help a lot. He does have that strength 7. Naturally. He's actually quite a good choice. Combine him with the, I guess you would want him to be with a regiment, which is unfortunate. But maybe you could afford a. Nah, you can't really afford to give something. Banner of Might, still want those runic upgrades. And even three attacks. Mm.
Yeah,
it's difficult because you probably the best situation would be to have him with the Great Book of Grudges, but that kind of defeats the purpose of having him as an additional character to support, as you mentioned earlier, to support another main regiment.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've kind of if you want to have a secondary fighting regiment with a character, then a hero with the parrying runes is probably better for it. Will amount to more
mm-hmm.
combat rest differentiation mm-hmm. than he will. But he's still yeah. quite nice and cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He does seem to be a better fit for a more regular army.
Yeah, and the hero is still gonna cost around the same.
Yes.
Because the pairing runes are 25 points each.
And then you kind of want some protection as well for that.
Yeah, definitely. So he's gonna be 200 points mm-hmm. as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's the entirety of the special characters. All in pretty decent places compared to what we consider special characters are used for. So none of them are in any way particularly competitive. They are all just improved compared to being absolutely horrendous. And some of them are actually decent, which is what we're looking for And nothing too overpowered. We don't want them to be used in every game, and of course we want you to be able to exclude them if you're the type of players who would like to play more competitive. We definitely do not advise using these characters, as mentioned. Now, anything we want to talk about or to round off the dwarves here before we finish for today?
No, in general, I like dwarves in Flail of Skulls. I absolutely hated them in regular Warhammer.
Yep.
They were boring to play against because you had to play a very certain type of game, and that would, if you played well and knew how to execute, then it would almost always pay off. It was easy to win a minor victory against dwarves. And it was boring to play a gun line, and was boring to play against it.
Yes.
And they never saw any combat. It only happens for people who don't know what the regiments are doing when they declare charge.
I agree.
It's a lot more fun to build dwarf armies now.
And as with all the listers, we're trying to do is that we feel like more tactics are viable. You can actually build an offensive dwarf line. The synergy is still mostly favoring a gun line or a variety list for the dwarves, but there is potential for a offensive line to still succeed and be a decent list. And I feel we have taken the dwarves from the bottom of the tier list and brought them very close to the middle with these changes.
Yeah.
And of course, as with all our army books, including this one and our podcast concerning the army books, you can find them all at our Facebook group, the Warhammer 5th Edition Tactics and Strategy, Flail of Skulls. We hope to hear from you and let us know what you think of the changes we made to dwarves. And please feel free to share pictures of your armies or your army lists, as we enjoy reading those and seeing what you have stored away. I think the only thing left to do now is to say bye-bye.
Goodbye.